he did not want anything he wrote to be taken to promote atheism. And the person that found that quote said, didn't he read his own book? But he said he didn't want anything that he wrote to be taken to promote atheism. The author also said, maybe he said that for his wife, because his wife would be in the non-evolutionary category and never did believe what he thought. I didn't want to do a biography on the Darwins, but she wouldn't fit in here. She's too liberal for us, but she did believe there was a God, and they would write back and forth, and she was kind of sorry that he felt the way he did, because it was so sad. By 1859, they really should have already known that life can't start itself. They should have known that there's never an observation where life starts itself. Life always starts from pre-existing life. Spontaneous generation is not true. Darwin thought that by now there would be missing links, some sort of filling in the gaps. There are still gaps. Also, if I can remember to quote it later, maybe I better do it now while I'm thinking of it. Most people are unaware Charles Darwin questioned his own hypothesis of origins. Quoting Darwin, why, if species have descended from other species by sensibly fine gradations, do we not see everywhere innumerable transitional forms? I've had that thought too. I don't know whether I got it from reading this years ago, but if evolution were true, you would see it everywhere. You would see transitional forms everywhere you look in living creatures. You wouldn't have to resort to fossils. So Darwin already had doubts about that. His wife never believed in evolution, but he already had doubts. If his theory were true, why did we not see transitional forms in life, let alone looking at the fossils? We already covered last week that about 430 mammals have been found among the dinosaurs. These mammals they find could be an extinct species that no longer exists, but where they exist, they're the same as now. They find these mammals along with the dinosaurs. They're still with us. Did they change? Maybe a little smaller, but didn't really change. Up to 430 of them. So if we look at observations, life never starts itself. If we look at observations, everything is distinct now. And even Charles Darwin wondered, why aren't there transitional living forms? Because if what he thought were true, he'd be able to see it everywhere. Things halfway. Another thought concerns design. You know, I'm not an example of real beauty, but it is kind of designed. You know, hand, eye, ear, somewhere in here, kidney. But if chance alone brought about life, why wouldn't there be a hole in the head back here forming an eye? Why wouldn't there be 6.5 horns coming out of a being? Why is it so designed? And we'll talk about animal design as we go on. There'll be more, but life can't start itself. The missing links are still missing. I'll give you a bunch of animals in a minute. And mutations, by and large, are bad or neutral, hardly ever good. I am obviously into theology and linguistics and Hebrew and Greek, and this is not my specialty, so I have to depend upon others for it. That's why I printed off some notes that should have been handed out in the bulletin. I'd like to look at those notes now. These are from people who are specialized in it. People have already told me they can't read my handwriting, so this is Jeffrey Simmons, a medical doctor, and the title of his book that he wrote is What Darwin Did Not Know. And we'll have to somewhat go quick, but I'd like to look at the first complete paragraph for our purposes. Some scientists think that one beneficial mutation happens per 20,000. Or to reverse this, 19,999 out of 20,000 mutations are useless, dangerous, or quickly diluted out. And most often these changes are lethal or lead to freaks. Now, so there is a doctor, and what Darwin did not know, I've got it over here. I don't want to weigh books around, but it's right there. Mutations don't add any new information. They're usually loss or variation of what already exists. And this is like good ones don't exist. Now, if you turn the page, this guy's name is John Ashton, and he is Australian. He teaches biomedical science, and I wanted to quote him because he also stresses that mutations really don't usually make anything that are good. And he's quoting, you see, on the page 2 of your notes, he's quoting Lee Spetner at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore. And so if I may quote that, Spetner shows that not only is the random generation of new genetic information to produce a new species statistically impossible, but on the basis of probability theory and information theory, most random mutations are going to produce changes that affect the DNA code in a way that makes the sections of the code less usable. Next phrase, deleterious, we'd say harmful effects on the organism. Then he quotes another one from New York, Rochester. Overwhelming majority of random mutations are harmful. They reduce fitness. Only in a minority are beneficial, increasing fitness. Then there is a website there. I didn't look it up because I trust him. A list of mutations that are bad. And then a list that has about 10,000 gene mutations or deletions causing human genetic disease on the Johns Hopkins website. Now, mine's underlined in red. I hope yours was color copied. Some maybe not. But if we go to the bottom paragraph, when mutations do occur, they often lead to disease or death. So where Darwin assumed that mutations would be nature's way to maximize diversity for survival, underlined below, the opposite is true. And Spetner is Jewish. I can tell from his publisher that he's Jewish. And he says, on theoretical grounds, random mutations cannot form a basis of evolution. So, the next one is there were so many species that existed in the past. And if you take the flood out, if you take out of your thinking no flood where there is extinction, then to make that many past species, a new one would have to evolve every 3 to 5 years. They don't. And by that, by the way, in footnote 32, that's Berkeley of all places saying that. And the last part I underline, not a single example of some new intermediate arm or leg or some new intermediate superior eye or some new anything with totally new genetic information evolving has been reported in the literature. There are more of these. I looked them up yesterday. I can't print them all. Maybe I'll print them all and throw them in a file. But you have problem number one of spontaneous generation. Can life start itself? No, never been observed. Problem number two, are there missing links? There are missing links. They're still missing. I plan on later on going over some of the animal missing links. We'll get to human missing links next time. Couldn't put them all in here. And then if you look at these mutations, most of them are neutral or damaging, hardly any are good. You see the statistics there. The cases that are used of good mutations, I can think of two of them. We have to stop somewhere, but I can think of two of them where they said they were beneficial, but a couple of years later they were not. One is a rat that had a mutation, and it was able to better handle rat poison, but then it got bone and vascular disease. So there's two or three examples of this where it gets trumped up and say this is good, and then they study it for a few years and know it was not so good. It looks to me like evolution is in trouble. I want to kind of wait till we get to the Genesis flood to talk about some of this. Because if I talk about it now, it'd have to come up again and be repeated in the Genesis flood. But one is the soft tissue dinosaur remains. 2013, they found some in Hell's Creek. That, as far as I can tell, was number one. And then we looked up this week on Axe and Facts. You ought to do this if something is of interest. You look up Axe and Facts, ICR, and you type in a search. And in this case, I did soft tissue dinosaurs, and up came a list of 48. So 2013 is number one. Now there's a list of 48. I see on the back, can't find it, guess again. This is the back of the new one. Okay, the new one, February 2020. If you really want to do science, there is one. I haven't decided whether I'll order it yet or not, because for me, five-page articles are sufficient, but here's a new one that's more scholarly and more complex. If you have a scientific background, you want to look at ancient and fossil bone collagen remains. There it is. And this same guy that made a list of 48 soft tissues found in dinosaur remains. I think evolution is in real trouble. But some of these, we better wait until we get to the flood to talk about soft dinosaur remains. Another one they'll talk about is mitochondrial Eve. In 1997, they started saying we're all related to the same mom. Okay, that's nothing new. We're all related to the same mom. Except if they use the mutation rate that the FBI uses, it was a few thousand years ago. So if you like this sort of thing, get ICR, look up Acts and Facts, Archives. It doesn't cost anything. Okay, Acts and Facts, Archives, and you can type in mitochondrial Eve. You can type in soft tissue dinosaurs, and up will come all these sort of things. There's two or three of them that will wait till we study the flood. Another one, I've been watching this for 20 years. I don't do it full time. I don't like this enough to do it full time. Okay? I do Hebrew and Greek and theology. This is like, every few years, catch up, read something new. There are other experts on it. But in Fenton Hill, New Mexico, they got a digger and they went 2.6 miles down. Okay? And they brought up zircons. We're kind of familiar with jewelry, cubic zirconia, but they brought these up, zircons, bedrock, 2.6 miles. They brought them up, and then they were testing decay from uranium to helium, uranium to helium. It showed a date of a few thousand years. Now, I think the way they're using this is evidence for a few thousand years, but it really shows all the other dates are skewed. These will all await. I haven't decided how much time on this. They'll all await Genesis 6 on the flood. We can't do them now, or we'll never read another verse. But now you could do Answers in Genesis. I usually, from habit, just do Acts and Facts. You bring up archives of the old magazines. You could look up soft tissue dinosaurs. You can look up mitochondrial Eve. You can look up zircons for what I just mentioned about bedrock stone bringing it up and not enough radioactive decay from uranium and helium, not enough to make the Earth as old as they say it is. I'm not going to specialize in this. I don't like it that much. Enough to keep up, enough to read 5-page articles, 10-page articles. Somebody else can do this. You can look them up anytime you want to. And books, you can start with here in the library or go look at ICR, Answers in Genesis, get some books on it. It looks to me like evolution has always been a bad idea, and it looks to me like it's getting in bigger trouble all the time, particularly with a common mother. Mitochondrial Eve, look it up sometime. Particularly when they dig way down and they find in zirconias, they find something that can't be that old, 2.6 miles down. I went over to Albuquerque a few times. I have talked with the people that do this. I've talked with the scientists, a couple of them. You'd be surprised how few people go to their meetings. I went to one meeting. I think there were 8 of us. But if you like that sort of thing, go look at Acts and Facts. And there are the notes for the mutation statistics I gave last week. Now let's come to Genesis 1, and every week I do this, I don't make any advance. Say we're right back at the same old verses. I think you could actually do, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth, and you could do that for 6 months and never make one more verse. We'll let somebody else do that. We are in Genesis 1, and we will reread about flying things and swimming things. Let's read verse 20. Then God said, "Let the waters teem with swarms of living creatures. Let the birds fly above the earth and the open expanse of the heavens." God created the great sea monsters and every living thing that moves, with which the waters swarmed after their kind, and every winged bird after its kind, and God saw that it was good. God blessed them, saying, "Be fruitful and multiply, and fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth." There was evening, there was morning, a fifth day. So fifth day is flying animals and swimming animals. Sixth day will be in a few minutes, and there will be animals, and then later in the day, people. They were created, complicated, and fully developed. Again, when they dig up fossils, they will have next to the dinosaurs a great many mammals. 430 was the amount mentioned by one author. And they're not partially developed. They're either extinct, developed and extinct, or they're just like now. A fossil record, now think about it. We've been all sort of brainwashed. What does it speak of? Death. They'll tell you it speaks of advancement. It speaks of death. They're dead. That's why I'm waiting for some of the information to wait till we get to the flood. They're dead, including soft tissue dinosaurs and marine or sea creatures up high. Death. They speak of de-evolution. That's the word I see more and more in the literature, at least the Christian side of it, saying de-evolution. Can't we think about it? We load up the cars with gas and oil and call them fossil fuels. It's a whole world of jungles and plants that got overturned and buried quickly. Must have been a lot of them, because we're all using them. It speaks of extinction and death. Doesn't speak of getting better. It speaks of death. Oh, well, more on fossils in a few minutes. Now we are kind of looking at flying things and swimming things. Honeybees live in hives of about 60,000. They can tell who belongs and who does not belong. Now, if we went down to the mall and went down to the grocery store and looked at people's faces, can we tell whether they live in Dallas or Amarillo? Not looking at their license plates. Look at their faces. bees can tell. They can tell who belongs in their hive and who does not. Bees communicate. The source I read said, if the nectar is more than 100 yards away, it will dance in an eight. If it's less than 100 yards away, it'll dance in a circle. So more than 100 yards, less than 100 yards. They will tell you what? They will tell another bee. I don't understand them, but they will tell another bee what direction to go based upon the angle of the sunlight and based upon how many times they flap. And they understand each other. Now, that speaks of intelligent design, but another thought is, how'd that develop really, really slow? How'd that work really, really slow? Now, I can't think about this very complex, but I'm back to my own thought. What good was the hole in the head while the eye was forming? I thought of that when I was 16. What good is a gradual generation after generation, ever enlarging hole in the head while eye is forming? Well, we've got lots of engineers in our church, and I think we'll use this anyway. Eagles make better helicopters and planes than people do. You guys are very good at it. But they can go up, they can go down, they can change directions, they can change speed faster than anything we know how to build. We did bees, now here is a wasp. A wasp, mud dauber, can sting its prey, but doesn't die. The prey doesn't die. The prey is paralyzed. Then it puts it near where the eggs are. It flies off. And when the little wasp is born, it has living food to eat. Now, when the wasp gets its prey, it will know how big it is. It'll know what kind it is. It'll put just the right amount of venom in it to make it paralyzed but not make it dead. Just the right amount and the right time. Then when the little babies wake up, they have something fresh to eat. How'd that start gradually? What was before it? How did that start? Herrings, gulls, fish, I mean, birds get out of their eggs and look for a red spot. Mama has a red spot on her beak. So, little birds look for a red spot. Their mama just happens to have a red spot. And then they get out and they peck the red spot. Then mama feeds them. Gradually. What was before it? I mentioned salmon last week. All these illustrations for last week. I'm a whole week behind. I had to just throw the notes away. Mentioned salmon. I've watched the salmon. I'm not sure that they were native to Michigan, but every year we would go up there, they kept putting salmon in the Great Lakes, and they would start to go up the creeks. But out there in the oceans, they can go from saltwater to freshwater, and freshwater to saltwater, and they swim around the ocean for 4 years, and then they look for the creek where they were born. And somehow they know the creek they were born. Then they will swim up the creek they were born, and they want to go to the same gravel they were born. Up to 1,000 miles. Now, that won't work in Michigan. It might work in Oregon or something. But they'll keep swimming and swimming and swimming and find the same gravel they were born. Really, really weird. Hummingbirds. I mentioned them last week. My mother said, do the same hummingbirds come back to the same spot? Yes, they go all the way down Central America, come all the way back. But in addition to hummingbirds, monarch butterflies, they go down and they come back, but it's not the same generation. They go down and die, and the next generation is born, and then it goes back. It's really, really weird. So we can do negative negatives against evolution, but if we look, really look at design and look at how things are made, look at the colors of the birds, look at the colors of the flowers, look at this sort of thing. Well, the swallows of Capistrano are a case of it, but a couple times I've looked at an Australian bird on the internet. It flies out of Australia, goes to Japan, crosses over the Bering Strait, goes to Alaska, comes down to California, then flies back to Australia. I would think it'd go down South America, but it goes from California to Australia in November. I've been telling our granddaughter about woodpeckers, because that kind of helps. Already mentioned, how did a normal bird start banging its head into the tree just for the fun of it? And it doesn't work yet, but it just starts bang, 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 bang. It hasn't worked yet. It can't get any food yet, but it just starts doing it. And then that bird dies, and the child bird starts banging its head. Then the grandchild bird starts banging its head. Then the great-grandchild starts banging its head. Already did that much, but new information. At 170 times the gravity force, we fall apart. Don't think it's a good idea to go out to the church today and start banging your head into the bricks. We fall apart. Woodpecker, 1,000 times gravity force, bang its head. How'd that happen? Slowly. Any bird you can think of flying around, they don't bang their heads into the tree. How'd that happen? Slowly. Well, you have to have neck muscles, you have to have a different skull, you have to have talons to grab into the tree. I assume other birds would break their skull open. It wouldn't just be a matter of a headache, it'd break their skull open. How'd that happen gradually? I had this thought, and I can't remember whether I've seen too many in Texas. I used to see them in Michigan when I was a kid, and you'd think, they're the only ones that do this. Why would some other type of bird start banging its head into the tree? Puffins. There's a cartoon about Irish puffins, so we see that more. But St. Lawrence Seaway puffins. They mate for life, but they don't stay together. They mate and fly apart. And they're apart for most of the time. But at a certain time of year, they come back together and they find each other on the same rock that they separated from. Really? They have maps? They have a GPS device? And they remembered that the rock, here's the rock that we broke up, and now at a certain time in the calendar, we'll come back. Creationists like to use bombardier beetles. They spray out a substance 212 degrees. So then their rightful argument is, how did that happen gradually? I don't think I'd want to drink hot water at 212 degrees. It wouldn't be very good. How did it get inside of them 212 degrees and then spray out their tail? How'd that happen gradually? In addition to the intelligent design, which if people think about it, it's everywhere. It's everywhere. I won't preach next week's sermon, but I got National Geographic and Time, and I would say by now it's digital. You can find all this evolution stuff on it, and it's like National Geographic 1999, big thing on a dinosaur with feathers, and it was glued together. But National Geographic caught it right away. Put her in right away and end up being glued together bird feathers and fossilized dinosaur. Glued together. Everybody agrees with that now. That's not controversial, but the media will jump on it. They don't want there to be a God. They don't want there to be a God, because if there's a God, then they have to submit to what God tells them to do, and they don't want that, so they don't want there to be a God. Intelligent design is everywhere if people will look at it. Also in here is the topic of symbiosis, where two forms of life need each other. There's actually a lot of this, and I'm not the one best to talk about it. My really dumb thought is, which came first, male or female? Which came first, plant or animal? And you can make a little list of this. Termites eat wood, but they can't digest it. Inside their gut is a protozoan, which can digest it. So the protozoan needs the termite. The termite needs the protozoan. There are a lot of these. How'd that happen? Nice and slowly. Yucca plant needs moth. Moth needs yucca plant. Now, I noticed on the February 2020 Action Facts out there, there was another case of that. So, well, if you want to grab those on the way out, there's other forms of life where they are dependent upon each other, and you have a real hard time with which came first. It's kind of a long list of which came first, chicken or egg, except which came first, moth or yucca, yucca or moth, and on and on and on and on and on. It's very complex. It's very much designed. Now, those were like bird illustrations and fish illustrations. Let's do a few animals, and we will continue reading at verse 24. Then God said, "Let the earth bring forth living creatures after its kind, cattle and creeping things, and beasts of the earth after its kind." And it was so. God made the beasts of the earth after their kind, the cattle after their kind, and everything that creeps on the ground after its kind. And God saw that it was good. I saw this years ago, a video, it's probably still up there, where there was a rabbit and a poison snake. Now, in the survival of the fittest, who's going to win, the bunny or the poison snake? So for a while, the poison snake kept lunging at the rabbit, and the rabbit would back up. It lunged again at the rabbit, and the rabbit would back up. Then Mama Rabbit was getting closer to the baby rabbits. She was all done backing up. The snake would lunge, and the rabbit would lunge right back. The snake would try, and the rabbit would actually claw it. Then at the end of the video, the poison snake slithers off, away. Who would have thought that? Animals are quite highly designed. So God made them right. And when they found those mammals in the fossil record, they were fully formed. They weren't partial. And in some ways, we might be smaller. And they might be smaller as a rabbit. And humans might be smaller than dinosaurs. But don't bet on it. Very, very complicated, very, very intelligent. So the poison snake ran off. I watched a few videos of dogs. Fascinating. This was PBS this time. I don't know what I think of this. But this dog was used to its owner coming home. He'd come home all the time, you know. 5:30, dog sits at the door. 5:30, dog sits at the door. Let's try it. This was either Oxford or Cambridge. I actually saw this. I didn't know if we could find it again, but let's have the owner leave at 10 a.m. Dog sits at the door. Owner leave at 3. Dog sits at the door. Now, I don't know what I think of that, but that was PBS, and that was either Oxford or Cambridge. They are amazing. They really are amazing. We said last week about when Jeff and Helen Smith got married, they changed houses, and he brought his dogs over there. They got loose and ran home. They went right home. I don't know whether a person can make a living studying animals like this, but they are very complex. They are very well designed. We are more so. That's next week's sermon. I want to talk a little bit about the missing links of animals, not so much of people, but of animals. The book I like the best, and I'm using this series now is to read it, is Jerry Bergman. I have Jerry Bergman's book. There's one over there on that table I noticed walking by it today. Jerry Bergman teaches in the medical school in Toledo. He was over here at Quail Creek, and they were giving lectures. I'll have to be brief, but the thing started, and I said, I'm not good at science, I'm good at history. He says, I'm good at science. He says, my pastor is being taught the Bible is unreliable, that the authors are all forgeries. So I never went to the lecture. I had to come home and get Jesus and History books and bring it over back to him, and then we traded books to help his pastor. Pastor's Methodist, and he had to go to a Methodist seminary to get a doctor's degree. That was the only one that the denomination would approve, and they were teaching him that the Bible is unreliable. Anyway, I got Jerry Bergman's book and have been able to read it fully now these last few weeks. There's missing links on everything. We mainly want to know about humans, but there's missing links on everything. I don't know where to begin. There's a chapter in here, say, on whales, you know, swimming whales, not the nation of whales, swimming whales. Oh, goodness, where did whales come from? Well, Charles Darwin thought they were bears. The bear went swimming. But then now they think, some say cows, and then some say hyenas, and some say dogs. And there's a chapter on whales in here. There's a chapter on everything. The missing links between the animals are all missing. And regarding whales, they have no idea. Guess this, guess this, guess this, guess that. The other day we pulled over and there was a Volkswagen. And it just came to mind, having read Jerry Bergman's book, a whale's heart is the size of a Volkswagen. And the final chapter in that book is, how do you go? I mean, bears went swimming, dogs went swimming, cows went swimming. Where's the evidence for that? And you go from the heart the size of a dog to the heart the size of a Volkswagen. And it beats 9 beats a minute, by the way. I don't know what a dog's pulse is, but they will. 150-ton whale's pulse is 9 beats per minute. And, okay, the dog went swimming, and then the legs became fins, and the fur fell off, and now it can handle the ocean depths where it's, we would die of hypothermia. Now it can handle the cold, and on and on, and that's the final chapter in that book, and he does every form of life all the way through it. So I just left out 6 more pages of notes because we can't do it all. But missing links, we often think of human missing links. That's next week's, part of next week's sermon, human missing links. And they're still missing, but there is missing gaps between everything, absolutely everything. And again, if evolution were true, if it were true, you would see it everywhere you look. If evolution were true, you would see transitional forms everywhere you looked, and Darwin said that. And yet, in life, they are separate and distinct and complex. And in the fossils, they are formed complex, and they're still separate. And the mammals and the fossils either are extinct, but if they're like now, they're just like now, except for maybe size and very small things. Life can't start itself. The missing links are still missing. And mutations, may I speak like a lay person in science? Birth defects are not a very good way of getting to complexity and advancement. Let's pray together, please.